Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert, and this insider, who is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Sportsnet NBA columnist Michael Grange. Michael, I take it you're not with the Raptors in L.A. since you agreed to do this 8 a.m. slot.
Correct. I mean, you never know, Blake. I might have got up at 4:30 in the morning.
There's one person around.
No, but I cancel that out.
Yeah, there's one person on the Raptors beat who would be up that early to do a radio hit, and it's me. I'm hosting this show, so that's it. The Raptors had the Lakers tonight, but let's look backward first, Michael. Coming off of that, they lose back-to-back at home to Detroit and Orlando. They start this road trip out with a loss at Cleveland, where Jared Allen only plays 10 minutes and the Cavs are sputtering a little bit. And now they're just sweeping their way through the West. They beat the Spurs. Sure, that's an expected win. And then they beat the Suns and Nuggets in close, very fun games on a back-to-back. I guess just what the heck, man? How do we figure this team out when they're that... They're terrible against the dregs of the league, and then they're beating the best teams.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to, you know, are they shooting the ball well or not? And when I say shooting the ball well, I don't mean shooting the ball really well. I mean, can they shoot at all? And I think when you look at that 2-5 stretch that included those back-to-back losses to Orlando and Detroit, they were last in the NBA in almost every shooting categories, including free throws. They were shooting like 68% from the line. And that cost them a couple of those games. And, you know, there's the obvious reasons for that, like Fred's out and OG's out. And related or not, Gary Trent was just in a horrible slump. And this team, because of the style they play, as long as they shoot adequately, they are a threat to win every night. And when you look at the When you look at the three winning streaks they've had 2-6 games and an 8 game. And, in the 6th game, I think they were kind of their season average true shooting percentage. And their next 6 game, they were league average in true shooting percentage. And then when they went 8-0, they were kind of, that's when everyone was shooting well. They were well above, they were over 60% as a team, I think. But they just get so many more shots. They get, more offensive rebounds, more turnovers, and as long as they're not shooting like you and I shoot, they got a chance, and I think that was the difference.
So I'm in the two things can be true camp here with the Raptors, where I go, all right, they looked good in these games. They certainly look good against the Suns. They certainly look good against the Nuggets. Those things, I agree with what you just said, Grange, but part of me also, my bigger takeaway, I guess, from those two games was of just how much two guys are MVP candidates. One is Chris Paul, just how when you take him out of the Suns, they just kind of are a very mediocre team, and they remind me more of the Suns of the past. And two is just how much Jokic is carrying this roster with the Nuggets that I'm just so unimpressed by, other than Jokic. And you go, man, how is this team good? He should probably win MVP just because everyone around him is so bad. Like, Blake's texting me about Bones Highland, and I go, yeah, he looks all right, but that's not a great sign that a team that's supposed to be a contender, their next guy that I'm impressed with is Bones Highland.
Well, you're not wrong there. I mean, I think the number that gets kicked around a lot in these MVP discussions related to Jokic is, I think they're 20.1 points per game per 100 possessions better when he plays than when he sits. And so basically when he's on the floor, they're a league best offense or a league best point differential. And when he sits, they're the worst team in the league. So I think you're right there. I would push back a little bit on the Suns. And, I think that they're obviously Chris Paul probably should be in the MVP conversation. It's just such a hard conversation to get into with the way, the three bigs are playing.
And now he's too many games.
And now he's missed too many games. But he is clearly having a massive impact on that team. Mm-hmm. But even taking away, I mean, they've been plugging along at around a 50-win pace without him in the lineup. They somehow put 140 on the Lakers last night which I guess is not that big a deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could get in a game against the Lakers right now. Like, Michael Grange would get at least a good, like, 8 points against the Lakers. I think that's a fact.
Just so people are clear, Grange can shoot it, though. That's the
yeah,
Grange,
that's what, of long, course. No, I'm not saying Grange is a nobody. I'm not saying Grange is a nobody. I'm saying the Lakers are so bad. Like, Carmelo Anthony going to the podium and admitting that the team has quit on the season, even by Carmelo standards, was quite a thing. Like, that was a... I went, oh my God, that is a new level of stuff. I guess all I'm trying to say here with the Nuggets and the Suns win is that they're impressive wins. They're good wins for the Raptors. I just kind of thought that the framework of, hey, they lose to these bad teams, but then they beat the best teams. I don't consider the Suns without Paul or this version of the Nuggets yet without their full complement of players as the best teams in the NBA. That's just the way I would put it.
No, I think that's reasonable. But the point I would make is how bad the Raptors have typically been without Fred in the lineup, let alone Fred and OG. So I think anyway, like they are good wins, and especially the Denver one. I mean, say what you want. I mean, they're going to win 50 something games on the back of Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic played. And, the second night of a back-to-back and all those kinds of things. It was, I think those are wins from a Raptors point of view. You got to feel pretty good about it. And I don't think it, to your point, I don't know if it really alters the ceiling for this team, but I think it reconfirms that, they have a style of play that that works for them. And when they have at least two or three contributors offensively, they are a dangerous team.
And I get what you're saying, JD, in terms of, hey, this could be a blip and those weren't fully healthy teams. And Michael's point about the Raptors weren't fully healthy either. But this is a season-long thing is why it stands out to me. The Raptors have almost an identical record against the top 10 teams in the league as they do the bottom 10. They're 11-10 against the bottom 10 teams, and they're 11-12 against the top 10. And I broke this down by how does their defense do against top 10 offenses? How does their offense do against top 10 defenses? And the same with the bottom. And basically, the data suggests if the Raptors only played good teams, they'd be a top 10 team in the league. And if they only played bad teams, they'd be a bottom 10 team in the league. Every way you slice it up, it's very bizarre. I do think there's probably some element of playing up or playing down to your competition. And not that the Raptors are, like, it's not a hubris thing where they think they're too good to try against Detroit or Orlando, but when you're playing this breakneck of style and you have guys playing 40 minutes a game, you probably subconsciously look for little opportunities to take a breather. So Grange, the road trip continues tonight. They've got the Lakers and the Clippers Monday, Wednesday. We don't know if LeBron's playing tonight. They desperately need those wins. The Lakers are only 2.5 games up on falling out of the playoffs entirely, let alone having to win multiple play-in games to get where they're going. How are you feeling about that Lakers and LeBron experience in general? I mean, I'm actually fairly surprised that you didn't pull the I'm Michael Grange card to be at this one.
I'm not saying I didn't try. I think it's fascinating, right? Like, LeBron, when he pulled this maneuver to get to the Lakers and they got Anthony Davis a year later, I'm not saying you, but it was easy to project. This was like the ultimate superstar masterstroke, right? You talk about player empowerment. This was this just never happens to aging players, right? Where they get to go exactly where they want to go, play with exactly who they want to be with, in exactly the market that could only help but attract additional players. Like, all of a sudden you're going, wow, LeBron might win. He might get that fifth, sixth, who knows, seventh ring. Because Anthony Davis was the perfect sidekick at the perfect stage of his career. And it's all kind of blown up. And, Anthony Davis, I think, escapes a lot of – he deserves a lot more. I don't know, blame is the right word. But, it's only three, four, 5 years ago. Well, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and I remember doing this for a book I was working on, Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo were the same player. If anything, Anthony Davis was a little bit ahead, and but he was the trends were. These guys were on their way to being historic players. Clearly, Giannis Antetokounmpo is, in my opinion, he's already won, and I think he's only 27. Like, I think he's got a chance, a real chance, to be a top 10 player all time. And Anthony Davis is kind of not, right? And so I think that's a big problem for LeBron James, and you just kind of wonder where it goes from here, because clearly, you know, LeBron still has a lot of gas in that tank, and he's showing it when he wants to. He's certainly shown it the past week and couple of weeks since the All-Star game, in terms of, you know, putting up 50-point games every other, you know, once a week. But I don't know if L.A. is going to be the place where he can gather himself and play out those last couple of years with an expectation of winning. It's just such a mess there.
Grange, I just want to circle back to Blake's point on the performance against the top 10 and bottom 10 teams, and just your perspective on how Scottie Barnes influences that, because I was immensely impressed in moments that he had versus Nikola Jokic and how that sort of affected the rest of the gameplay. And that's not to say that he hasn't performed against lesser teams, but I feel like there's something about momentum and running downhill all of a sudden when Scottie Barnes is having that sort of effect, especially against a Jokic and in a game like that.
It's really fun talking about Scottie Barnes, because there's just so many ways you can, you know, attack the subject. And the one that's kind of fascinating me the most lately is, first of all, you know, his raw numbers at this point. You can almost make the case he's a favorite over Evan Mobley in terms of Rookie of the Year if he keeps up what he's doing post-All-Star. I think he might make the difference, especially if the Raptors can catch Cleveland. But you know, it's funny watching that, you know, all year, you know, people, who does this guy remind you of? Who does he compare you of? And you get everything from, you know, Magic Johnson to Giannis to, you know, and I'm watching the Denver game, and I think he reminds me of Jokic a little bit, which is crazy. But and there's two things that kind of really jumped out to me. And one is he just somehow at his own pace ambles into easy offense and ambles into playmaking defense. So that's, you know, and it's just impossible to quantify. You could watch Jokic his whole career and you'd never quite, I think, grasp why he is, again, probably going to be a historic player. It's just something in his pace, something the way he reads games, something the way he processes games, and then, you know, inject every skill conceivable in the sport, and it becomes pretty special. I'm not saying Scottie Barnes is anywhere close to that in terms of pure skill, but in terms of his ability to kind of just sniff out the seams of a game and, you know, make a play, that is something that really jumps out to me. The other thing that really jumps out to me, and it was very evident in that Denver game, is he is so competitive. And, mm-hmm. you know, he'll take shots, he'll get hit, and, you know, when that play when Jokic kind of floored him, inadvertently, on purpose, I'm not sure.
Inadvertently? Come on. I actually took that as a big sign of respect from Jokic, that, like, he actually cared about Scottie Barnes enough to lean into him like that.
Sure.
Barnes okay, did I'll, stop I'll, short, though. Like, it was a bit of both of them, I think. But, yeah.
I agree with you, Blake. But, I mean, it was a basketball play. It wasn't anything crazy. But Barnes, you know, his first play when he touched the ball was to go right at him at that point. And, you know, and his ability to kind of sense a moment, his ability to, you know, when things get hard, to raise his game, like, that's really quite evident too. And, as you're saying, like, the way he was able to compete, I think probably going to be the MVP, or should be the MVP, really notable. And if you go back to that Suns game, Blake, what do you got, three
Blake,
steals?
Hold on. We're gonna reconnect with you, Grange, because it was like you went underwater like a couple times. It was like you were bobbing. You're doing like breaststroke right now, where it's like head above water, head below water, head above water, head below water. Okay, so I think that's my take of the Raptors should take Jalen Suggs over Scottie Barnes is actually going to go down as my worst take. And I also had a draft take of the Cleveland should take Derek Williams over Kyrie Irving. So I've had some baddies out there. Like, I've had some bad draft takes. We all have. But I thought that Derek Williams over Kyrie was going to be my Mount Rushmore, chisel the face in. But I really do believe that my thought that they should take Suggs over Barnes is going to go down as the worst one ever because of what Grainge said. And I think Suggs is going to bounce back. Like, I still believe in Suggs.
Yeah.
But there's so many things. First of all, I love Grainge's comparison to Jokic because they couldn't be any more different from a body standpoint. And I go, I love comparisons like this. All those points Grainge just made are incredible. They're bang on. Blake, you just threw the Rookie of the Year odds up here where it goes Barnes is plus 450 behind Cade and Mobley. I know I'm watching these games every single night, but you know me. Like, you and I both watch a lot of NBA. You and I both love Mobley, and I said it to you after that game against the Cavaliers. Like, Mobley is great, but if you're looking at his offense, it's set shots. It's a lot of catching lobs or catching stuff around the basket. Scottie Barnes can – it's ugly at times, but that pace thing Grainge said is correct, that it's a weird herky-jerkiness to Barnes' game that I'm not used to seeing, and so it still feels, I guess, a little ugly to me. It feels a little bit like those push shots or whatever. Just they go in, and I go, that looks like a fluke. But if you do it this many times with this much consistency, then it's not really a fluke. He clearly has feel around the basket. His rebounding and his just force around the basket is obviously incredible, and it's actually the one thing I love about the Raptors that seems to be really playing out is this formula of having all the 6'9" guys that crash the boards. It's why I'm kind of like, I can't stand watching Chris Boucher play most of the time, but then he does the offensive rebounding thing, and I go, maybe they should re-sign Chris Boucher and keep him around the team and keep going with this formula and make sure that it works. But for my money right now, if you were asking me, and I love Mobley, who would you rather have long-term? I would be having a tough time with it because some of the stuff that Barnes has, the innate feel for the game that Grainge was talking about, the ball handling ability, the ability to already create his own shot at this age, and just the body type, the competitiveness where, yeah, he reminds me a little bit of Ja last year where Ja showed no respect to his elders in a way that I loved. And Scottie Barnes is this year's rookie from that regard where he's doing the hitting the three in your face being like, don't you know who the bleep I am? Barnes is that rookie. I love him.
Yeah, I only hit threes in big spots characteristic.
Oh, Grainge is back.
Is fun. Yeah, Grainge is back. So just off of that, JD, in terms of the Rookie of the Year, we set up at the All-Star break of like, what are we most interested to see the rest of the way and what do we need to see? And it was, hey, Scottie Barnes has to take all this good stuff he's doing and start driving winning with it. And he's very much done that to where he's started to catch up to Mobley on some of the advanced metrics that at the halfway point of the season, we were like, oh my God, like Mobley's having this, like a rookie never has this kind of effect by things like win shares or EPM, which is my favorite kind of catch all. Barnes is starting to catch Mobley. He's starting to get there. And the term Grainge used that I love, and it's I think the best way to capture what Scottie Barnes is doing that stands out is the processing, right? He just sees the game in a way that's really hard to snapshot. So Grainge, I guess my question off of that would be, given the year Barnes has had and how quickly he's gotten to this stage and honestly improved over the course of the year, does his timeline shift your thinking for what the Raptors need to do this offseason? Like, if he's ready to be this kind of guy with a larger role as soon as next year, does that shift the way you approach this summer?
I mean, I think it does. When you talk about timeline, it does. I think it changes your expectation. And I kind of made note of this when they were playing Phoenix. You know, you're kind of looking at a team that's clearly the class of the NBA, probably, you know, is the favorite to win the NBA title. And you kind of go, well, what's the difference between these two teams? And there's a couple obvious ones, you know, certainly at the center position. And, you know, I think at the two guard position with Booker versus Trent Jr., but it's not like this vast sea of difference. And the wild card in bridging it is Barnes because, none of the contenders have a player like him. So that all that said, I just think that this is still a team that has needs. But it's getting a little harder to pin down exactly what they are. I mean, I think the simplest thing would be to add some real depth to this team, and certainly depth in terms of shooting. And that would even out a lot of the low spots and might raise your ceiling a little bit at some moments as well. But it's kind of like, I don't know if there's an obvious, you know, we got to make a big move because Scotty's accelerating the program, because just Scotty Barnes himself is accelerating the program, right? Like, I mean, I think you can almost stand still. They shouldn't, right? They do need, as I said, at least some quality depth in terms of shooting. And you know, I think the whole 6'9 experiment is great, but there's no rule against one of your 6'9 guys being 7 feet. That's fine. You know, so that might be something you want to look into. But you know, I think they can kind of get away with almost standing pat, because I think Barnes is on his own, just accelerates the whole program. And, you know, one other point I was making when I was making some comparisons, and JD, when I was listening to you there, his force around the basket and his force with the ball, he's got some Kawhi in him too. And, you know, I think that was always my favorite thing with Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi, Jokic, and Ja, those are the three guys we've compared him to. So it's no big deal. No pressure.
But and again, you're not saying he's going to reach that level. But I mean, that quality that Kawhi had, where if he really wanted an offensive rebound, he'd go get it. If he really wanted to steal the ball, he'd go steal it. And it was uncanny to watch. You watch it over and over and over again, and you realize it was kind of something he could do. I'm not saying Scotty Barnes is at that level, but he's definitely got some signs of that. So I don't know. What would you say, Blake, in terms of them advancing in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think they kind of made their bed when they flipped Dragic for Thad Young instead of rolling that contract over into something with money for next year. I think their only real means of adding a star level talent is going to be to trade from the core, which they've been hesitant to do. And maybe Gary Trent moves the needle a little bit there. But yeah, they're entering this offseason with, hey, they have the bird rights on Boucher and Thad Young, and they have their mid level to use, and they have whatever comes up in trade. They don't have the chips to make a big swing. So yeah, they're going to have to, I certainly think they're going to take flyers on shooting, and they're going to try to find a center. And I think how they play over these last, 15 games plus the playoffs will dictate a little bit of that, because you want to see how Barnes continues to grow and how these guys look in, hey, maybe a play-in game, but maybe not a play-in game. Grange, the only one game back of the sixth seed now. Do the Raptors want the sixth? Like, is that the internal goal, or do they sneaky want the playoff gate revenue of hosting a play-in or game or two?
I think they'd be pretty happy at this point to get to that sixth seed and host, you know, have a playoff series, maybe have at least potentially three home dates. So I think they'd be fine with that. You know, the other thing that's interesting too is, you know, I guess the one question we haven't definitively answered this season is because of injury, really. But with Barnes, Siakam, and Ananobi, there's a lot of overlap there. And are you committed to crafting a style of play that fully embraces all those three players and all the skills they can do, and being kind of unusual that way? Or do you kind of go a little more conventional and go, do we really need these three guys who, they aren't the exact same player, but they do overlap a lot. And so maybe that kind of changes something in the offseason too, but that's a little too early to tell, I think.
Yeah, I go so back and forth on the OG thing. Again, Blake knows this because I bring it up all the time. It's tough because the injuries have happened and they haven't been able to have all the guys together, and Scotty Barnes is so young. And like, when we're talking about, hey, they've lost to these bad teams and they've beat these good teams, I just go and say, yeah, it's because it's a group that's been trying to find their identity this year. They're still going through growing pains, especially when there's a scenario here that Scotty Barnes, a rookie, might end up being their best player. But when it comes to this offseason, that's going to be, to me, the big swing question, Blake, is to me, OG Anunoby is not an untouchable player. He's not. I think that he is you need to win that trade, you need to get a lot back for him in a deal. But, like, I brought up the idea of him going for someone like Miles Turner in a deal, where you go, hey, what ends up being the roster balance versus having all the same guys? The fear is that that's what makes the Raptors special, is having all those stretchy guys and OG being someone who can knock down those shots. Like Grange just said it, when do the Raptors win? Well, it's when they hit shots. Look at the Raptors' record without OG. It's bad because they don't have guys who can hit shots. And guess what he does? He hits shots. He's got a swagger to him. He's got a poise to him. But I've also mentioned that there are times when I watch the Raptors with all of their players, and it feels like OG has to force himself into the flow of the game, offensively anyways. And I just wonder every once in a while of, hey, is there a move out there? Is there a player out there that just changes, that lets you stay who you are, lets you stay special by being long and physical around the basket, but also just gives you maybe a little bit more of a fit offensively night in, night out?
Giannis.
Yeah, sure. I'm down for that.
The one thing that, you know, we talk a lot about going to the trade deadline that there is sort of a surplus of in the league is good bigs. And none of them moved really at the trade deadline. And I don't know if, not having a big is a feature or a bug exactly. But it is fun to think about this roster with, you know, a Jakob Poeltl, with Yusuf Nurkic, with a Miles Turner. Like, because there are just moments where you just kind of look like, man, it'd be nice to have one of those guys, and what would that mean for how they could play otherwise?
Imagine just not watching Kem Birch, you know? Like, if we never had to watch Kem Birch play basketball, how good it would be.
Well, there is that, the other wild card here, honestly, is, and I cannot believe I'm saying this, is Precious Achiuwa. And yeah, every single trade, and when we did that trade deadline exercise, I think every single trade I had was Precious Achiuwa was in it. because his number was a little higher than the next rookie you could throw into the deal. And I don't know if this is real or if it's an illusion, but all of a sudden the guy I've watched look so amazing in his pregame workouts is sort of showing up in games. And that's another wild card. I don't think it's something you're going to bank on the way you might bank on with Scottie Barnes. But in terms of your roster construction, I don't think you're going to turn your back on that anytime soon right now.
No, and it's not a mirage. The numbers back it up. He's shooting the three better and more often. He's finishing better around the rim, even though he's not a finished product there. So you're not imagining that, Michael Grange. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man. We really appreciate it.
Always. My pleasure, guys. Enjoy your week.
Michael Grange, NBA columnist at Sportsnet. And that insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. The Raptors are in action tonight against the Los Angeles Lakers. One of nine NBA games on the slate tonight. And wake break going to be NBA heavy because there's one NHL game. NCAA's off until the play-in games on Tuesday. Let's take a break. Let's try to get back on the winning side of the Wake and Rake. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert. We went from the best Wake and Rake of all time last Friday to the worst Wake and Rake of all time the Friday after. So yeah. Awesome. Not a great Friday night for us. Uh-huh. I will argue that process-wise it was okay. You could see the logic behind what we did, but okay. Yeah, on all 1-3, it's the first time we've had three losses on the same night. Not great. You know what's a bad one?
Yeah, we needed Kobe Chris to bail us out from the first, like, all the just complete loss yeah. ever.
You know what's a bad one? Because I didn't have the spreadsheet updated this morning. I just waved it away. No, yeah. It's not for me. Okay, so we had Minnesota and Columbus did not hit the over. The Vancouver Canucks did not win. The Pittsburgh Penguins did win. And Scottie Barnes finished with 6, not 7 rebounds. Then, of course, bounced back with a big rebounding night the game after.
And he set on 6, by the way, for the entire fourth quarter.
Like, I know. And like, process-wise, the Raptors did have a ton of offensive rebounds in that game. It's fine. It happens. That's why these odds are not
Blake,
free money.
It's fine. It happens. It rushes Blake to lose.
That would have been an... That would have been an interesting spreadsheet one, though, because the line was 7.5 everywhere. Blake got 6.5 in this. Like, I don't know if there was a line for it. Of course, we got it.
Well, Coolbet gave us boosted the 6.5 odds as yeah. well.
Yeah.
Was, so, that was listed at 6.5 with them as well? Okay.
No, yeah. the way we did it, in the way they originally had the.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Yeah. They had the line wrong to start the day, where in their bet builder, and this, by the way, if anybody wants a little bit of a heads up, is that if you hit the bet builder earlier, sometimes it's good for you. Just saying to those of you out there that have a little bit of a theory, you might want to hit it earlier because blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it just
blah,
we ended
blah,
up
blah blah.
We ended up well. You could get the blah blah blah. You know what I'm saying? It's they screwed
you
up.
You yada it over the best part.
Listen, people always ask me, "Hey, what do? You got to shop lines because this is why is sometimes books make mistakes. They just do. Not everybody has a billion people working on every single part of their site. It's why, honestly, Cuthbert, you've been red hot with hockey lately. Hockey, I'll never forget. I met a sharp, like a real big time sports gambler when I first started in the industry. And we started, like, I'm talking about someone who's laying heavy action every single night. Their career is sports better. That's what they are. They play cards and they gamble in Vegas for a living. What a life. And the biggest piece of advice he gave me was you gotta bet hockey more than anything else because the attention the books give to lines, the numbers that they have for these lines, are not nearly as sophisticated as the way that they work for other sports like the NFL and the NBA. Even the NBA, like Haralabob Vorlagaris got rich because NBA betting until like 5 years ago didn't start adjusting for the differences between first and second half betting. Like, and this guy just completely took advantage of it and made God knows how many. I'll tell you what, guy's making good money. He made good money because he's all of his pictures are places that look like fantasy camp, like only Elon Musk hangs out there with him. So he did pretty well off the NBA.
Well, also, he gambled his way into an NBA front office job, which can't be understated. Canadian legend, Haralabob Vorlagaris.
No, it's truly incredible. Anyway, let's get into the lines tonight. Let's start with the Raptors. -5.5 at the Lakers. The Raptors are facing LeBron James, the LeBron of murdering this franchise for over a decade. That LeBron James, the Raptors are going on the road and laying 5.5 points. Blake Murphy, did you ever think you'd see the day?
Well, I did because we don't know if LeBron's playing.
Uh-huh.
Second night of a back-to-back. They had said pregame, it will depend on how LeBron feels coming out of last night's game. The reality is the Lakers need wins. So I'd lean toward LeBron playing, but if he's not feeling great on the second night of a back-to-back. So this is an obvious don't touch until you know what's going on spot for me. The Lakers are bad.
Nice.
But it's LeBron, so you got to be careful laying points anytime. And the Lakers are bad to the tune of, like, they've only covered once in the last four games, and that was against Washington. They're losing to Houston in overtime. They're losing to three quarters of a San Antonio team, getting wiped by Phoenix in a game that they really need to win. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity on the prop plays here, too. But none of that stuff's up, obviously, because we don't know LeBron's status, and it's 5:30 in the morning out on that West Coast.
One of my biggest pet peeves with social media, well, I have a billion, but one of them with the Wake and Rake is that I get whenever I pick the Raptors and they lose, people say, don't jinx them, stop picking the Raptors. Even though I've picked the Raptors, like, I would say that on my balance of tonight's a night to play the Raptors versus not. I even told you guys the Suns line the other day. It's a confirmation bias thing. I am smashing the Raptors here tonight. Are you guys kidding me? The Lakers are terrible. They're 9 games under .500. They're 9 games under .500. They've won 3 of their last 10 games. They get embarrassed by bad teams on a nightly basis. The Raptors are tough. The Raptors have a bunch of guys. Like, what would you say if, okay, LeBron James doesn't play this game? When do the Lakers get a player that's in, like, how many Raptors do you go down before the Lakers get a player that's better than one of the Raptors guys in this game?
Depends if Fred plays, but pretty far down.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If LeBron doesn't play in this game, I think the Raptors have the best 6 players. Like, that seems important. That seems fairly important here. And I would say that if LeBron plays, the Raptors have the next six best players in the game. This is just an obvious bet against the Lakers spot. And I know we all fear LeBron James. And you know what? Maybe the King throws one back and he dominates the Raptors and blah, blah. And we end up losing and it sucks and it hurts. And maybe Blake's theory about how the Raptors suck against the bad teams and so you shouldn't bet
them. That's not a theory. That's the actual numbers.
You're right.
But the question is, do they consider a LeBron Lakers team still a good team and therefore play well against them?
This team stinks. And so, yeah, if you believe the Raptors are eventually going to course correct against bad opponents, I would just say that this is a good spot. My other part of this too, Blake, where you say, is LeBron going to play? They need wins. I don't know if the Lakers are going to even push for the postseason. Like, the Pelicans are right there behind them. I think the Pelicans are going to jump them. I don't know.
But they're still 2.5 up on falling out entirely.
But that's what I mean, is that I think it's still – I think they're just in a spot where they're not desperately scratching and clawing for wins. I think they're in a spot now where they go, our only hope is getting into the playoffs and getting hot, and our only hope for that is by making sure that LeBron is well-rested and that he's good to go in that spot. So are we really going to kill LeBron against a tough team? Like, do you want to throw LeBron on the floor tonight against Scottie Barnes and Pascal Siakam and Precious Achiuwa and Cam Birch? That's a lot of physical bros that you got to go up against. That's a lot of clanging and banging for LeBron James. If I'm the Lakers, I sit him down tonight, I take my L, and I move it. I keep it moving.
Maybe. I mean, there's probably something to that. I would suggest they probably need to have more than 2.5 games clearance on a play-in spot to fully get to that point. But they're obviously not rushing Anthony Davis back. They have no chance of getting out of the play-in or really even getting that 7-8 matchup where you have two cracks at it. They're going to have to win two games to get into the playoffs. So I think you're right that that's the approach they probably should take. My guess would be they don't take it until they're a little further insulated from teams like Portland and San Antonio, who are not intending to win, but because the Lakers have been so bad, they continue to close the gap on. So,
also, I feel like LeBron feels more pressure to play on the road than he does at home.
He is here on Friday.
That's what I'm saying is I think LeBron is more he's mentioned it and he said it on the shop even recently where he goes, I feel pressure that some kid shows up and then doesn't get to see LeBron James. I think on a back-to-back at home in Los Angeles, given all the way the season is going, I'm just saying to me, it actually does feel like a coin toss that he doesn't play tonight. And I would lean towards my guess is if I'm the Lakers, if I'm being the smart, I'd sit LeBron tonight.
Are we confident that Fred's going to play? Because although, you know, LeBron-less Lakers are, not the Nuggets, even though the Nuggets are pretty short after Jokic. Betting the Raptors without Fred again, I feel like at some point you're going to run into a wall there.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't play.
Yeah, that was just purely
everything they. Yeah, that was the talking point on it. He is still listed as questionable tonight, but the idea was that hey, it's a back to back, so.
Okay, let's get into our picks.
Yeah,
let's get into our best bets.
Cuthbert, do you want to tee us off? I know there's only one NHL game tonight.
Will you?
I might be sort of canvassing opinion, so maybe I should go last here. Although my first read has been good. I think I'm 0-2 when I've had to.
I was going
to
say you canvass opinions. You canvassed opinions. I said, hey, go with this. It won. And then the very next time you canvassed opinions, you went away from us.
That was a legitimate read, though. I do need validation, I think, because the ins and outs, the questionables, the exact rosters here, not exactly sure. But I can't go hockey because...
Hey, buddy, I'm the excuse maker on this show.
Stop cutting my grass.
Okay, while I'm making excuses, I will say my initial read, 9-1-10, Waken Rakes. But we will move on because I can't go Coyote Senators. It's just, you know, what are we going to get from that? So I got to go to the NBA board. And again... I'm going to throw some by you because, I'm not necessarily feeling all that confident. 76ers -2.5 over the Nuggets stood out for me.
Yeah.
76ers are, though, on a second half of a back-to-back, but they're still probably reeling a little bit after getting embarrassed by the Nets. They did win a game since then, that being the first half of this back-to-back.
Yeah, but the Magic took them to overtime. That's not a feel-good win.
No, but maybe looking ahead at this one, I don't know. All the MVP discussion, Jokic versus Embiid, you could maybe find a reason why they were looking forward or a little past that one. So that one sticks out to me. Also, the Milwaukee Bucks -1.5 over the Utah Jazz. Also, the over 235.5. Like, these are two of the highest scoring teams in the league. It seems like Milwaukee scores 125 points a night. So that is interesting. And then my last one was, again, it's sort of been my default here, the Chicago Bulls -5 over the Sacramento Kings. I think my lean is the Bucks, but if you guys are opposed to that, I will back off that.
I like every single one of those picks.
Yeah, it's a heavy favorite night in the NBA. So just a couple notes on those. Gobert is questionable for that Bucks-Jazz game. Mm-hmm. So that's a point in your favor. Alex Caruso's
back. I actually think
Gobert
playing hurts them because Giannis wants to dunk on him all night long and make a statement. And if he's not in there, that he'll be a little bit more passive. But yeah, the point
Bulls,
is taken.
The Bulls snapped their 6-game against the spread losing streak on the weekend. Zach LaVine's questionable for tonight. So that's a bit of a – that's why that line is shorter than you might otherwise anticipate. The Philly one, it's really interesting because it is Jokic-Embiid, right? You think they'd want that for Embiid. They sat James Harden on the only other back-to-back he's had since they acquired him. And he has dealt with that hamstring thing. He played 44 minutes in that Orlando game. Yep. Embiid played 42. My guess would be they want that for Embiid because it's going to be such a talking point for the MVP. So guys play and they play well. So I'd lean that way. But that's one where get ready to pull your bet if the Sixers go the other route and go the, well, we just played 45 minutes. We don't need this win. We're not going to give Jokic a W against Embiid.
Yeah, I wonder if that price is already factoring in Harden not playing. Because to me, if Denver wins this game, the MVP discussion is wide open. It's actually a two-horse race, and those two guys go down to the finish with it. If Embiid wins tonight, I think the narrative closes, especially if he outplays Jokic tonight and his team gets the win. In such a tight MVP race, I actually think this matters. I really do. Sometimes we over-extrapolate what this is, but sometimes I think that we actually nail it down and you go, no, this is the right one. This is sort of the correct take. Blake and I were, again, texting a little bit on when did the Raptors play the Nuggets? Saturday? Yeah, Saturday,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And Jokic is just so brilliant. He's so well, – I don't watch – I wish I watched more Jokic, that I just caught his games more on League Pass because – I kind of take them for granted a little bit, and the Nuggets are just one of those teams where they play at a weird time, and it's they don't stack high on the priority rankings. I'll just be honest. I feel bad about saying this, but I've watched probably 20 more full Lakers games this year than Nuggets games, which is really embarrassing. Jokic is incredible. He's such a deserving MVP. But this just feels like such a strong narrative year for Embiid. The only thing that opens the door is narratives going against him. And a narrative of, hey, Jokic got overlooked all year. Embiid steals the headlines, but Jokic is still better than him. And his team, despite missing... Is Aaron Gordon going to play in this game? Because they might be missing three of their best four players. And if he goes in and beats Harden and Embiid tonight together, I'm just saying that those shows, first take... Those shows, the American media, what's the NBA one called? First Up, NBA Up, or whatever. All those shows are going to be leading with, here's Stephen A. Smith. You want me to do my Stephen A. Smith? He's going to be like, we overlooked Jokic. We did all the things where we looked at Embiid as the MVP, but Jokic is the true big man in the NBA, and he deserves to win his back-to-back MVP. That's going to be it. That's going to lead all the headlines. So... James Harden, you better show some guts and play in this game and support your big man and hit him on a lot of like those short rolls and let Embiid just do work. Because, yeah, it's definitely happening. So I like that bet, Cuthbert, but I'm going to stay away from it until I know Harden's in that game. I would say I'm good with either one of those picks that you're going to make. I don't care if LaVine plays in this game or not. The Sacramento Kings hilariously made a win-now trade this year, and in a year where you just need to get to the 10 seed, that's, again, 28-40 is what the Pelicans are. It doesn't seem impossible. The Sacramento Kings are like, we can't do that. We can't get there. Not only can we not get there, we're 2-8 in our last 10. We're a tire fire. We're a dog's breakfast. So anytime you want to fade the Sacramento Kings, old JD's happy to get on board with it.
I will officially lock in Milwaukee in stone so you guys can move ahead. But I will be betting the 76ers separately because, you know, it comes down to the fact that they have that extra. They have that extra superstar in James Harden. Even if he has reduced minutes tonight, I think he can make an impact against that Nuggets team that we just saw against the Raptors.
Bucks money line or minus 1.5?
I'll go minus 1.5.
Whoa. Right.
Yeah,
spicy both. Little picante.
JD, what do you got, man?
I actually also like the entire NBA board tonight. I got to tell you, it's a favorites night. Hawks Blazers is too big, but Clippers are on a back to back. My Cavs. Am I getting Jared Allen back yet? What's the deal here? No, still no.
No, you're not getting Jared Allen back, and LeVert, Markkanen, and Dean Wade are all questionable.
Yeah, no, then I'm not touching that. That's too many against a Clippers team that can be pretty frisky at times, and I'm guessing is going to battle. I always lay the points against the Oklahoma City Thunder, but the Hornets are too much of a trick-or-treat team, so I'm not locking that in as the official play. You know what? I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to go with the Bulls. I'm going to lay the 4.5 points. I don't think that LaVine is going to be in this game. Just, again, the 2-8. 2-8, that Sacramento Kings team is right now. They're 24-45. They've lost 4 straight games. You're the Logan Roy. You're not trusted, okay? So, Chicago Bulls. Go beat that team. Go score a billion. Maybe the DeMar California, he's around. He's in California. He's going to want to do things. I don't know. Sacramento's barely California if you've ever been there before. You never feel like you're in California when you visit Sacramento. But either way, go do the damn thing, DeMar. Go do the damn thing. Do we have Vucevic back in this game?
Yeah, he's not listed on the injury report.
Then fine. Then I feel comfortable. I'll watch Vucevic and Sabonis go toe-to-toe, and I'll take this. I'll take Chicago Bulls minus 4.5.
And I'm going to wrap us up with Wolves minus 5.5 at the
Spurs.
That
was my other pick.
Wolves 7-1 against the spread in their last 8, yeah. Expecting Anthony Edwards to play in that one. So,
did you see what Pat Beverly said about Anthony Edwards?
No.
Pat Beverly said he has a chance to be MJ.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And Pat Beverly also had a couple glasses of wine and thinks that Russell Westbrook ruined his reputation.
Pat Beverly said a lot of stuff these last couple days.
That's what I'm saying. Because he was drinking the old vino on a podcast, which I love. Yeah. More athletes drinking wine on pods, I say.
Yeah, or on morning radio. Come on,
Austin Matthews. Come on, have 2 glasses of wine and come on and tell us about whether or not you think this team has it. Whether this team has it.
Yeah. All right. So to recap, Wake and Rake is Minnesota Timberwolves minus 5.5, Bulls minus 4.5, Bucks minus 1.5. It's a favorite heavy night for the Wake and Rake in the NBA.